I don't know why, but does someone have just a word or a prophetic word or something to share? Maybe they don't, and if they don't, that's fine. But I just thought there might be one. Well, maybe if you kind of feel like that might be you and you want to share it with the team later, then please do. Grand. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, guys. That was absolutely lovely. Thank you. That was a great blessing to us. Thank you very much. If you'd like to take a seat. So now, I'd like to introduce to you Peter. And Peter is my... Peter's my training incumbent, and he has been my training incumbent for about, what time is it? It's 10 o'clock, just gone, for about 10 minutes, really, haven't you?
You didn't have grey hair before.
No, well, it's been a tough day already. Peter's in Brundle, and he's going to be sharing just a bit about the story of what's been going on in Brundle, yeah, and a bit about discipleship. So I pray for you as we begin. So, Father, I thank you for Peter. I pray, Lord, that you'd bless him now. Fill him with your spirit, and Lord, would we open up our ears to hear what you have to say through him. In the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. It's good to be with you this evening. Do you know, you know that you're travelling to the other side of Norfolk when you get an email that says, here's the postcode of the venue, but be careful, it will take you to a chicken farm. So, but perhaps Matt knows his training incumbent slightly better than we thought. So it's great. I didn't go into the chicken farm. Actually, I feel quite proud that I came straight here. So that's a sense of achievement for me. And do you know what? We're focusing on discipleship. And sometimes we may ask the question, if we're looking at church growth, if we're looking at revitalization and church planting, you know, why focus on discipleship at this point? Why? Why look at discipleship? And I wonder what the word discipleship means to you anyway. I wonder if, as you look back on your faith journey, whether you can identify people, individuals, who have been key in your discipleship. Those individuals who have been key in your discipleship. I want to share just two individuals in my life. One has been my youth workers. They were key as I look back in my discipleship, because they were a group of people who, do you know what, put up with me no matter what, who stuck with me no matter what, who didn't ever fail to ask me, so Peter, how are you? How's it all going for you? They didn't ask my parents how they were doing. They didn't ask my parents how I was doing. They asked me. They were interested in me. And when I was sitting at the back of the church doing homework rather than engaging in the service, they sat next to me. And the other person that has been really influential in my discipleship, I believe, was my grandmother. She's dead now, but she, I hadn't realized until very near to the end of her life, she turned to me and she said, Peter, do you know what? I've been praying for you every single day since you've been born. I was blown away. Every single day. I was 36 years old when she died. Now, that's a lot of days that she's been praying. And I'm sure you've got people like that that have been really influential in your lives. And do you know what? We are helping and supporting others in their discipleship too. Why look at discipleship when we're focusing on church planting and church revitalization? Because we're called to grow disciples. We're not called to put bums on seats. We're called to grow disciples. That's what the Great Commission at the end of Matthew's Gospel says. Go into all the world. Make disciples. Teach them. Baptize them. Nowhere does it call for us to fill pews and put bums on seats. We're called to grow disciples. And I want to share with you this evening a little bit of our journey since we've been at Brundle. And some of what I say you may agree with, some of it you may not agree with, that's fine. Some of it you may not care what I'm saying, that's fine too. But I'm just sharing some of our journey and some of what we've been through as we focused on discipleship. It's sharing just some of what our experience has been as we've tried to change the culture and tried to help our church focus on discipleship. I came to Brundle 7 years ago. I served my curacy in Stalham and moved to Brundle nearly 7 years ago. And whenever you go to a new church, particularly in the Church of England, the bishop sits you down and you have a chat. It's a bit like, you know, dad and son chat. And so he said, Peter, you know, I've got a bit of advice for you. That's nice, Bishop. Thank you very much. Listen. Listen. And so I went and I did listen, but I asked two questions. And I asked the question, so where are we at as a church in terms of mission? Where are we at in terms of discipleship? And the response that I received from various areas of the church was, mission, we could do more with. We're not very good at mission. And the other response was, discipleship, we did that last year. Right, okay. And it made me realize that actually, so often, we look at discipleship the wrong way round. If we could have the second slide, please. What is a disciple? Well, a disciple has often been described as an apprentice, trying to become like the master. A disciple, it has been described as somebody who can make mistakes, but over the watchful eye of the master. I quite like that. As somebody who makes mistakes all the time, I quite like that one. But I think the most powerful definition of discipleship that I've heard recently is a disciple is someone who disciples. A disciple is someone who's discipling others. And sometimes I think we've often seen discipleship is quite linear, and certainly that was our experience coming to Brundle. Discipleship was seen as linear. So you begin at this end when you first become a Christian, and you journey to maturity somewhere around here, possibly before you die, possibly not. And often we see it as quite linear, and it's often punctuated by discipleship courses. Sausage factory type stuff that actually we put through people through a discipleship course that will help move them along the line of discipleship. And I want to suggest a different way of looking at discipleship, and it's not my work. It's Paul Harcourt. He's written a book called Growing in Circles, and I'd really recommend it. If you're serious about looking at discipleship and trying to change the culture and how we think and view discipleship, I'd really recommend his book, Growing in Circles, by Paul Harcourt. And Paul Harcourt outlines six elements to discipleship. Thank you. And I'm just going to really quickly go through them. His book goes in much, much more detail than I'm going to this evening, but I'll just gloss over the six elements. We begin with intimacy. Intimacy, and by the way, we've got notes, so you don't need to do loads of writing. Just let you know. Intimacy is about us drawing closer to God. Our spiritual growth will always center on developing a greater intimacy with the Father. Intimacy. And then we have the second element, affirmation. And receiving affirmation is often key in releasing people in discipleship. We work from the Father's affirmation, not for it. The third element is identity. Our true identity as sons and daughters of God. We're called sons and daughters. The fourth element is authority. Knowing that our identity gives us great authority. We're part of God's plan. The salvation plan for others. We join his family. We take on the family likeness and we get involved in the family business. We're called to grow disciples. The fifth element in the discipleship circle or spiral is destiny. The decision to take our destiny from God, not from our backgrounds or our circumstances. The belief that where God places each one of us in life is where he wants to use us. And destiny doesn't come to us fully formed or totally defined. And it's about being on a journey. And the sixth element is obedience. The heart of discipleship is hearing the call of Jesus. And thinking like a consumer only prevents us from growing in discipleship. And Paul Harcourt in his book suggests that discipleship is like a spiral. So it's not linear, but it's like a spiral. So intimacy, which leads to affirmation. Affirmation, which leads to identity. Identity, which leads to authority. Authority that leads to destiny. Destiny that leads to obedience. And obedience that leads to greater intimacy. And the idea being that it's a spiral, that each of those elements is revisited as we grow as disciples. But as they're revisited in greater depth. And that for us has just revolutionized how we see discipleship. Because we suddenly realize that everybody will be on a different point in that discipleship spiral. Everybody will have different experiences that they bring to that spiral. And everybody has the opportunity to grow as disciples. And as a church, we made very early on the decision that we wanted to grow wider and deeper. And that actually mission is about all of us growing as disciples and helping others to grow too. And not only has the spiral been helpful in slowly beginning to change how we think about discipleship, actually for us as a church, it's given us a new vocabulary. And it's amazing when you journey through church life week by week and suddenly you hear somebody say, I can see that that's a spiral. And suddenly people will start to use some of the vocabulary to do with the discipleship, what we call the discipleship spiral. And suddenly a rather abstract concept for many people is suddenly grounded and has a bit more definition. Thank you. As a church, we've had to really journey quite far about the whole question about who. Who disciples? And as I'm sure I'm not alone, in our church, whenever you talked about discipleship, all the eyes turned to the vicar. Well, that's what your job is, isn't it? And actually, that's been part of the culture change. That actually, it's all our jobs. And it's not something that is necessarily going to happen on Sunday morning. And we've had to talk, have in various conversations and talk in various ways about how and where we disciple ourselves, but actually support other people too. And Ruth, the head of the sports factory, she's got a brilliant phrase. I'm trying to, it's going to do life together. That's right, isn't it? Yeah. Well, should I do life? Yeah. And for me, that's it. That's about discipleship. Journeying with people. Doing life together. It's not all about a course. It's not all about Bible study once a week. But it's about being willing to journey together. In fact, we had 10 Bible study groups that met across the parish. We changed the name to growth groups. And we underpin them by not just studying the Bible, but actually doing life together. So caring for one another, praying for one another, supporting one another, challenging one another, encouraging one another, helping one another grow deeper in relationship with God. Each one of us is responsible for discipleship, to take responsibility for our own discipleship, but also to be willing to disciple others. And discipleship isn't something that happens necessarily accidentally. I think we need to learn to be a church that is intentional about discipleship. I think one of the issues that we've had, that we've faced as a church over the past decades, is that we've focused so much on mission that actually we've forgotten all about discipleship. But actually, if we focus on discipleship, actually mission should come out of that, because we should be delighted to go and excited about sharing our faith with other people. And so we need to be intentional in our discipleship. Not expecting that people will just catch it, but intentionally. And discipleship, I think, is hard work. It's demanding. It can be sacrificial at times. It means journeying with people. And discipleship isn't always very popular because it's incredibly hard to measure true discipleship. You see, if I run a course, I can say, well, do you know what? 30 people came on this course. But actually, that's not discipleship. Discipleship is about seeing the impact of people growing deeper with God. I think in an age, in a society where everything seems to need to be measured at the moment, we need to actually release ourselves a little bit from that. And actually, we need to focus on true discipleship, on doing life together, on journeying with people and helping people grow. One of the things at Brundle that has been really key has been we ran a Talking Jesus course. I don't know if you've heard of that course. It was released, I think, was it last year or the year before? Year before. And you can get it online. And it's video clips and discussions. And it's absolutely fantastic course. And it's meant to be a course that helps equip people in sharing their faith. Not just in a church context, in fact, not a church context at all, but in an everyday context. So people who have normal jobs, people who are at the school gates, people who are going out for coffee, how to talk and share about their faith in a non-threatening sort of way. And we ran the Talking Jesus course, and again, it changed the vocabulary that the church was using. And one of the things that, one of the feedback from people, as part of the course, you're encouraged to think of five people right at the beginning of the course. You're encouraged to think about five people, to write them down, and to commit to praying for those five people. And then it goes on to look at different ways that we can share our faith, different ways that we can be intentional about sharing our faith. But the thing that really stayed with most of the people that did that course were those five people. And even though the course finished a year and a bit ago now, people are still praying for those five people. People are still seeking ways of sharing their faith with those five people. And I would suggest that those five people are the people that they're seeking to disciple. Can we have the next slide, please? And so there are some questions that that I thought would be good for us to break into small groups to chat about, and then feedback. And I wonder, when you think about your local context, what needs to change culturally in order for us to begin to focus on discipleship? I shared with Brundle that it was moving away from just the linear sense of discipleship, the tick box discipleship, that we've run a discipleship course, so we must have dealt with discipleship, but actually to see it much more part of everyday life. But I wonder, in your local context, what is it that perhaps needs to change? How do we measure discipleship growth in our local context? How do we know that people are growing in their discipleship? What help do we need to be discipled and disciple others? And that really is looking at ourselves instead of our church. What do I need in order to grow as a disciple myself, and also to feel equipped to disciple others? And then the last question is, if you get time, what do our congregations need in order to grow in their discipleship and also to disciple others? Okay. So, if you want to just where you are in small groups, focus on those questions, and then in a few moments we'll have some feedback.
So, does anyone have this is where you have the gift of a group of people who are willing to ask you, you know, kind of they've thought about what you've said. We've been hearing the discussion. So, does anyone have a reflection or a question that they would like to put to Peter? Think perhaps that that has come up from your discussion. Doesn't have to be something necessarily revolutionary, but just something that you thought of or something that you'd like to ask Peter. Anybody?
About discipleship?
Yeah, about discipleship.
Okay, that's fine.
Thank you. I mean, I like what you've shared with us so far, and I'm looking forward to getting hold of a copy of the book and reading it myself. But I don't know if we're answering those four questions, but this is what I'm asking you. Right? Where do you see, or where have you experienced whole thing about Christian character, the development of Christian character, because that's part of our discipleship too.
Absolutely,
isn't it? Our prayer life, our holiness, our self-sacrificial giving, that sort of thing. I mean, I don't just mean in our times, but, you know, of our time and our talents and ourselves. Mm. Where does that fit into your discipleship plan?
I think I think that is one of the things. I mean, I've used the word. I don't know where he's gone now, but I was Jonathan quite rightly pointed out that I've used the word measure, and actually I think perhaps impact would be a better word to use, because actually that's where I see That's the impact. And as people are growing discipleship, all those that you've mentioned, you hope and pray that actually we see an increase across the church. And I think it's true to say that as we journey, that actually they're part of a natural flow out from our discipleship, I would suggest. And so I think we have seen it. Very hard. You know, we fill in these statistics for mission. I was just saying to Jonathan, you know, we fill in these statistics for mission. Where is the box for actually how's discipleship in your church? There isn't. And, and yet it's those little things. We've seen an enormous journey in our young people. Like many churches, we have a handful of young people. But you know what? Listening to them talk, hearing the conversation, I think, my goodness, the journey that they've been on. Does that answer the question?
I think there's something there about, you also, the fruit is Christ-likeness, isn't it? You know, that's kind of like I suppose in some senses, that's the end of the spiral, isn't it? You know, that's where it, but we're all, at various points on that cycle or moving up and down it, whatever. But you want to make it.
You set your third one down. What help do we need? Would you like to just talk a bit more about that, please?
Well, I think. Oh, sorry.
Are the microphones on? Yeah. Can you not hear it?
Okay. Okay, a little bit more about the third one. What help do we need to be disciple and disciple others? I think some of the issues that we have come across has been people feel as though they're not able to disciple others. And I think some of that has come from actually people not really understanding that we're all on this growth journey, that actually I, as a church leader, I need to be growing in discipleship. And yet we seem to get to a point where discipleship doesn't seem to matter so much. Or we think we've almost reached it. Or actually, as we experience in our church, they're a mature disciple. Well, actually, we're all on this journey and we all should be growing. And so I think sometimes what do I need? I need somebody who is going to check in with me. So how is it all going? I need somebody who is brave enough to challenge me. And sometimes when I react in perhaps not a Christ-like way, to actually, do you know what? I need people who will challenge me as a church leader. So tell me, they don't say it in this way, but who are you discipling at the moment? Or who are you sharing your faith with at the moment? Ooh. Because I think, and I speak for myself, I think for me as a church leader, it's really easy to fall into the trap of saying, this is what you should all be doing, and actually forgetting that actually that's what I need to be doing too. So I went on a church growth conference and I went myself and some of our PCC went on this church growth conference. And the person leading said, they were talking about inviting to church. And the person leading the conference said, just make sure you're asking your vicar who they've invited to come to church. And suddenly I was like, oh my word. But it has really challenged me because it's about that accountability as well, I think. Because I know that there are people, and they're not doing it to be to cut me down, but they're doing it to actually encourage me. Because sometimes I need that, because it's easy to step back. And people, some people say, oh, it's easier because you've got a collar. Actually, do you know what? Sometimes it's easier to hide behind the collar, I have to say. And so I personally need that. And I think we all need different things to help us grow in our discipleship. Perhaps some of us do need a really supportive group that will be able to study the scriptures together, that we'll be able to work out what does that mean for today's life? What does that mean for my context? So I think, does that answer?
Grant, maybe time for another one. Anybody?
Here?
Oh, great. It didn't come up in the group, but with you talking in the context of accountability and discipleship, nobody's mentioned spiritual direction.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts?
Yes, I. Yeah, there's there used to be quite a push for spiritual for people to have a spiritual director. I quite like the word accompanier. Or somebody who will journey with me, but I have one. They take on that sort of role. But I personally, I find it really helpful. And again, it's part of that accountability. Part of it is about knowing that actually somebody's concerned about my journey. I think we can often be concerned about other people's journeys and sometimes fail to look at our journeys. Yeah.
I think there are loads of different resources out there. Maybe one of the things that you might want to say, okay, you know, I'm here and I want to make an impact for the kingdom. I'm here and I want to do something new in my village or something like that. And then you're thinking, okay, well, actually, I can't do that in my own strength. I need support around me if I'm going to do that. So maybe one of the things that you might want to take home is to think, okay, how am I going to have that support? So that I know that I am really following Jesus in what I'm doing, that I am being discipled as much as I am discipling others. And actually one often flows into the other. So that might be something that, and spiritual direction might be one of the things you think, okay, that might be a tool that I can take and use. Or it might be, actually, I need to get that group around me. There's loads, you know, that's like, I suppose, what that question is about. What have a think about, what might I need? What might our little group need? Do we need someone from outside who's going to come in and ask us questions every so often? What is it? What do we need together?
I think the bottom line is that we often, in the Bible, that Jesus often uses plants or images from agriculture. And healthy growth needs to be deep growth. If we're going to grow in a healthy, sustainable way, the growth needs to be deep, anchored. Needs to be allowed to be fed the nutrients. And I think growth, church growth, is never particularly easy, but can happen quickly and fast, and actually it's just not sustainable. And what I want to suggest is if we're focusing, whether it's revitalization or church planting, but we're wanting and longing church growth in a healthy, sustainable, strong way, then we need to attend to the roots too, and we need to grow deep as well as wide.
Grand. Okay, now in a moment Jonathan is going to come up and talk about young people, but I kind of feel like we probably need about a 2 minute brain break. So perhaps there's somebody in the room, I'm gonna ask you, really brave, perhaps there's somebody in the room that you've never spoken to before. Okay, if half of you do it, then we've got it sorted, haven't we? Because that's all it needs. So why don't you go and find someone perhaps you've never spoken to before in the room, and just ask them where they're from, or if you don't want to do that, just sit around your tables and have a bit of a stretch for 2 minutes. Okay, off you go. Okay, well, I've given you just long enough to start a conversation, but not long enough to actually have a proper conversation, because we're gonna motor on, and I'd like to introduce once again to you a man who wears many hats. and that's not just to keep his head warm. It's the person who is currently managing, I suppose that's the right word, the church planting and revitalization program at the Diocese of Norwich. But also he wears a just as important hat as well, which is Diocese and Children's Youth Work. What is your job title? What is your job title? Children's Youth and Families. He's my favourite, Children's Youth and Families Development Officer. So I'm going to pass over to Jonathan. He's going to talk to you about youth.
Okay. Just thinking about growth, when Peter was just sharing that bit at the end, about how deep the roots go. If you have a plant and you lift it up and you snip its roots, and then you plant it somewhere else, and then you dig it up and you chop its roots and you plant it, and you dig it up and you plant it, what does it become? Well, it might come dead, it might become a bonsai. And if you look at a bonsai tree, it's a fairly good representation of the real thing, but it is a lot smaller and the fruit are tiny. And I think sometimes when we're sort of always looking for something new and something different, we don't allow those roots to go deep enough and to stay there to actually get the right nutrients. Some plants, their roots go down up to 2 meters to get the right nutrients. And, you know, that's something that we need to think about, particularly as we go out and start planting new churches or working at revitalizing, is to actually spend the time to get those roots deep to the nutrients. So I want to talk a little bit about young people, because as part of the this whole program for the diocese, the program is centered around high school catchment areas. And there's a very good reason we did that. It's because still, even nowadays, roughly 75% of people come to faith before they're 21, 22 years old. And so if we're going to see growth in the church, we need to focus on that area as much as others, if not more so. Now, there is also a question. Most of what we've talked about today has been around people within the church and how we grow as disciples ourselves and how we maybe disciple other people within the church. But what about those who are outside the church, these people that we're meeting who are on the edge? You know, the whole point of what we need to be doing is going out to people who are not part of church and working with them. So I want to just share a little bit about the story of the Good Samaritan. So you'll know the story, and various people walk past this poor guy who's been beaten up, and they cover their eyes. And we need to look around us in our communities and not cover our eyes. So sometimes you might see, you know, somebody's having an accident or something on the street, and it's sort of like, I don't know, if I go over, I might have to do something. Or we see an argument and we don't really want to step in, and we cover our eyes to it. And I think as a church, we do the same. We look at stuff and we think, that's too difficult to deal with. Let's just cover our eyes and hope that we don't have to actually deal with it. And so we need to be open to seeing the mess that's around us and actually looking at it straight. So the Samaritan man, he saw what was needed. He had his eyes open and he saw what was there. He was brave. He stopped. I had a conversation with my wife probably a month and a half, 2 months ago, just after one of the attacks on London Bridge. And we had this conversation about which way would you run? Would you run away or towards? And I said, I hope that I would run towards. I hope I would be one of the people going to help. So if I'm in London and there's something goes on, just know that that's what I intend to do. Because it's, you know, and for me, that's my commitment now. It's okay, I've sort of decided that. So we've got to be brave. The Samaritan, the guy who stopped, it was a dangerous road. Somebody had been beaten up and robbed. And he was stopping. So he was putting himself in danger just by the fact that he stopped. So we need to be brave enough to give it a shot. We were thinking at church yesterday about gymnasts, and particularly those on the beam. And you watch somebody on the beam and it's quite astonishing what they do. But the only reason they can do it is because they've fallen off a lot of times. They have failed far more than they succeed. And so we need to be prepared to do that. We need to be prepared when we're working with other people to fail because we tried. You know, the guy who stopped, he didn't really know what he was up for. He didn't know what he was going to need to do, but at least he tried. Oop, wrong way. We don't know exactly whether he was on a horse or not, but he took this bloke all the way to the next inn, so I doubt he carried him, so probably he did have a horse. But he had to get off it, and he had to get down on the guy's level, and he had to meet him where he was. And sometimes we come at things from our ivory tower, and we will speak at people as though we know it all, and they just need to get up on our level rather than us get down on theirs. And of course, he journeyed with this poor person who'd been robbed. He picked him up and he took him with him. How many times have you been in Tesco or Sainsbury's and you can't find something and you're desperately looking around and eventually you decide, I suppose I'll have to ask someone. And when you ask one of the shop assistants, they're busy stacking the shelves. And what do they do? What do? Take you to it. Not if you're in Lidl, they don't, but anywhere else, they probably do. They don't go, oh, you need to go down there, pass the dog food, pass the nappies, take a left, take a right, and then it's somewhere down there. And I think sometimes we can do that with people, that we start off saying to them, oh, what you need to do is you need to go and find Jesus and you'll find him on a Sunday morning over there. Rather than starting a journey where we go with them. And the other thing he did was to pour on oil and wine. He used his resources. He gave of himself. And ultimately he blessed that person. But he didn't do it just in the moment, of course. He took him to the inn. He left money, he came back, he revisited. It was a long-term commitment to journey with that person. And that's what we need to do when we are discipling people, is we need to get at their level. We need to invest of our time and our resources, and we need to journey with them. This is terrible. How can you press the same button and it go backwards? Hey. Right, here we go. Right, so these are some representations of some young people that I know that I've worked with over a few years. And I just want to tell you a bit of their story. So Laura in the top corner there, very difficult young lady to work with, very aggressive, abusive, quite foul language. And we discovered that her home situation was quite difficult. And one time we asked her to leave a youth cafe we were running. And she said, I can't. And we're like, what do you mean you can't? She says, well, I'm not allowed back home before 11 o'clock. We said, well, what happens if you do have to go home? She said, well, I have to sit in the dog kennel. Now, the dog kennel wasn't a little one. It was like a big shed. But still, she had to sit in the shed in the garden until 11 o'clock. So it was very difficult to deal with, you know, her aggression and things. But one week she came and she was particularly bad. And I said to her, you know, Laura, you're going to have to leave. You know, we can't have you here. You're you know, you're disturbing everybody else. It's really, you know, whatever. And she turned to me and she said, it's all right for you, but your mum didn't die yesterday. And of course, what we don't see is where people are at. And what we don't see is us trying to fit people into a mold means that we forget to see them as people. Amy in the middle there, she lost her mum when she was 2. Her dad was trying to bring up 4 kids. She was the youngest. Her uncle died about 3 years later in a motorcycle accident, leaving her step-aunt, I guess. No, yes, her step-aunt, to look after 4 kids on the other side of the family. And it took us a long time to work out why one of the other girls in the family was her sister but also her cousin, and why she talked about her dad as her uncle, and it was all very confusing. But basically, these two people had 2 families, and they got together and brought them up together. But that was a mess. It was really hard to work with them to actually understand, what is it when I talk to you about who God is, when I talk to you about commitment and family and all of that, she said, it's all right for you. You've got it all. Justin at the right, his dad was in the Merchant Navy. When they were on holiday one summer in the Lake District, his mum fell over, knocked her head and died. And his dad had to be away for 3-4 months at the time, so he had to go and live with some people who were his guardians. And in the course of one summer, he was basically on his own. Tim down the bottom there was driving a group of friends. There were 7 of them in a sort of people carrier. Went over a crossroads, hit by a car, and 3 of them were killed. And Rosie in the bottom there really struggled at school, bullied a lot, ended up being homeschooled. And over the course of 4 or 5 years, gradually, through coming to a youth group and working with her, we managed to introduce her to some friends, get those friends around her. She started off 2 hours a week in school, and gradually she went back. But the reason I show you those is that the young people around us have all got stories, and they've all got things going on. The BBC did a report recently where one in 16 young people over the last year have lost a significant family member. And those are the people that we should be reaching. Those are the places that we need to go. Those are the places where we need to not cover our eyes and say, actually, this is where God's calling us. To reach the lost, to reach the broken, to reach the people that have been beaten up by life. And that's where we can have an effect. The gospel is about love. That's what the message is. But actually, the method is love too. It's how we love people. And for young people, often, discipling them can just be about journeying with them. It's just recognizing where they are and journeying with them over a long, long period. This is something I told you about right on the first night. It's from Mark Iaconelli's book. About anxiety. If I just read that to you, anxiety is the inability to be present. It's a state of agitation in which we lose our larger capacity to empathize, to love, to respond to the needs of others. We worry about what should have happened or fear what might take place. In anxiety, we lose touch with what's driving us. Our actions become self-protective, reactive, and compulsive. And that, unfortunately, is what a lot of us do in church. We are anxious about what might happen if we look and we engage with these broken people. And that's not just young people, it's just the wider society as well. But anxiety stops us loving. And we need to start looking to being loving and journeying and committing. And of course, with young people, a couple of places that I've worked, young people have project fatigue. They've heard too many people come who say, oh yeah, we've got funding to work with you. We're here to, you know, we're going to journey with you. And 2 years later, they're gone. And unfortunately, in the church, that happens too many times. Young people are used to people walking away from them. And we go and replicate it. And so what we need to remember is as we go into areas, as we start to plant, it doesn't matter what happens in terms of our ideas for the church, but as individuals, we need to stick with people. So my call would be if you, you know, if somewhere here we decide to plant a church somewhere or you start working with a group, regardless of what happens overall, if you commit to young people, stick with them. Done it again. Okay, working with young people is not always easy. So this is a little bit about teenage brains and what goes on.
Between childhood and adulthood, our hormones kickstart a phase of significant change. And while the physical changes of adolescence may be obvious, less visible are changes that these hormones trigger in our brains, which might just be responsible for turning our teenage years into a bit of a roller coaster. Throughout our lives, our brains undergo a process called neural pruning. The synapses through which our neurons communicate are either lost or strengthened, depending on how much we use them. Well-used synapses grow strong, while the weaker ones fade away. It's this process that makes us capable of faster, clearer, and more complex thought as we grow up. But, crucially, pruning happens at different rates in different areas of the brain. By the time we're adolescents, the neural networks that communicate emotion, risk and reward are well developed, while others, which may help us to plan, prioritise, think logically and moderate our social behaviour, are yet to mature. So, a potential mismatch between our emotion and our judgment arises just as our emotional and social worlds are becoming more complex, making an increase in social anxiety quite normal at this time. Researchers at the University of Oxford want to know how this might affect our behaviour as we progress through our teenage years. In a recent study, they focused on the social worries many of us feel as adolescents. When presented with photographs of ambiguous social scenes and asked to imagine themselves in the picture, anxious younger teens were more likely than others to perceive negativity. But while these heightened emotions and the struggle to control them can make adolescence a difficult time for some, it's also a golden time for learning and growth. The adolescent brain is particularly agile and flexible, and as such, it's especially open to new opportunities, new technologies, and new experiences. So while our teenage years may feel pretty weird, they're also pretty wonderful.
Oh, come on. Just do it on one. And again. Okay, so just sort of summarising that because your brain develops differently in teenage, particularly starting from the back and working forwards, and the forward bit is your emotions, the last bit that develops in the teenager is their emotions. So what tends to happen is they're very reward-focused. And the next. They're very high-risk. They have poor emotional intelligence. So this is the bit at the front that's not yet developed. Next one. Lack of planning, lack of prioritising, lack of thinking logically. Hopefully you'll recognise some of these traits. So this picture is a sort of idea of what a teenage brain might be working like. A few emotions, one or two, primary colours, and it's sort of okay. And then teenage years kick in, and the next one is this. They've suddenly got all these emotions, and basically it goes brown, and you just get the moment. But, of course, what's happening at the same time is that they are very open to new ideas. They're very open to thinking about outside the box of what's going on. And actually, it's one of the times that teenagers particularly have a huge amount of capability in terms of asking questions about faith. They want to know. And I imagine that's one of the reasons why so many people come to faith in those years, because it's those exploring times when that's there. But what we need to remember is that when we're working with with teenagers is that you will get this brown moment where you think you've made a breakthrough. They're onside, and then the next week, it's like, what happened? And but we need to press on through that. Thank you, Liam. So just a little bit about a sort of generational thing, really. Some research that was done recently just looked at different generations and what's called the iGen generation from 1995, people born after 1995. So these are just some general traits. They're obviously not exact for everybody. They're sort of overall. But typically, people born in this sort of period long for safety. We're living in a world that's very unsafe. It's very unpredictable. It's very fast changing. And so actually what they often want is safety. They're quite pragmatic and realist. They're also quite clean living. We have an idea that somehow teenagers are this sort of like off the wall, going and, you know, living it out up wildly. But actually that graph on the right is the teenage pregnancy rate. One of the lines is Southampton and the south of England, but the green line is the UK in general. And over the last 10 years, it's been a steady decline. And so actually, the same graph is pretty much the same shape for underage drinking, drug taking. Actually, teenagers today are more clean living than, for quite a long time, really. But they're very impact focused. They want to see what difference they can make to the world. They've changed from how I can change it to how we can change it. And you know, we've seen that with Greta Thunberg, that the whole movement of young people saying, actually, we want to see a change. And one of the challenges of that actually is a sort of side thing is that young people are looking at the world and they're going, you broke it. I remember as a child, we used to go around the village and collect newspaper and sell it. We used to go to the shop and buy everything in paper bags. And as a family of eight, we had a dustbin that was maybe taken once a week. Now, as a family of two, I have two wheelie bins. What happened? In our generation, what happened? And the young people are looking at us going, okay, so you want to tell me that you've got good news for me and you broke my world. So we've got to be honest about where we're coming from and actually apologise sometimes to young people and say, actually, we did. But they are hyper-connected. And Peter mentioned it when we were chatting, just how young people are really good at discipling one another. You know, they're always online, they're supporting one another, they're checking up on each other. It can go horribly wrong because they're not particularly emotionally stable. And so every now and then they'll send something which has completely the opposite effect. But in general, they will actually really stick by one another and develop those really long-term friendships. So how do we start? Where do we start with young people? Just done it again. First thing is build relationship. And this is for everybody, isn't it? It doesn't matter whether it's young people or not. If you want to start discipling somebody, you need to build a relationship with them. One of the stories I love in the Bible is where Andrew goes and finds Jesus. And, you know, we often think that Jesus called all the disciples. But actually, Andrew went and he said to John's disciples, hey, quick, come and follow this guy. Not quite sure what John thought. It's like suddenly they all left him and went to, you know, but it's that relationship thing. It's about what is it that people are attracted to? What is it that they're actually following as we journey with them? So as we get to know people, remember stuff about them. It's a very simple thing. Peter mentioned the five people that you could think about. What I want you to do is you've got 30 seconds to think of the names of five young people that you could be praying for. They might be on your road, they might be in your family, they might be people outside the church. Just think of five names, or you'll forget them when you leave. What I encourage you to do is to put those names up somewhere, and next time you see them, find something out about them, and don't ask them what they want to be when they grow up. ask them about their week, and then next week ask them how it went, if there's something that they're worried about. But take the time. One of my pet hates is at church, occasionally somebody will say, oh, I've put the youth on the rota. And I'm like, we don't have anybody in the church called the youth. They're individuals. They're quite capable of doing it. Just go and speak to them as an individual and say, actually, Jack, would you be on the rota for the coffee next week? And treat them with that level of responsibility, because they're actually quite capable. But we mustn't treat them as a group, but treat them as individuals. Much like Peter said, it's pray for them. Pray for them often. It's a tough time. It's a really difficult time to be growing up at the moment. And, you know, you look at what's happening in the world in general, it's a very uncertain future. And we need to be really praying for them, praying that young people will come forward who can disciple other young people. Teach models of Christian living, and if necessary, use words. Demonstrate it, do it, live it. You know, Peter was reminding us of what Ruth said about just journey with people. Show them what it is to have commitment and to turn up to things, to serve. Do it with them. Invite them along to help you do it. Just live it. You know, Jesus said, by your love, people will know that you're my disciples. Not by you shouting at people and telling them off and telling them what they ought to think and what they ought to do. But we need to do it through love. When I was teaching on this with a young people's group many, many years ago, one of the things that really challenged me was we lived in quite a rural area, and I was very aware that we were at least 25 miles from three hospitals. We were sort of right in that sweet spot. And I remember thinking about my kids, what would happen if something happened and I needed to get them to hospital or whatever, and I'd been drinking. And so I thought, okay, maybe for my kids, I need to commit to just always being available. And then we were talking about this with the youth group, and it dawned on me that often the young people get themselves in trouble out and about. You know, rural area, they're always dependent on someone for a lift. And partly because of the experience we'd had with Tim, it was this sort of moment that I thought, crumbs, I don't want any of them to get in a car with somebody who's been drinking. So I said to them, here's my number. If ever you need it, you ring me. That was probably at least 20 years ago. And I've done that with every youth group since. I have once been called at midnight by someone who was in North Norfolk somewhere and was stuck and couldn't get home, and, you know, it was all kicking off. But what would I have done if I wasn't available at that point? Said, oh, I'm really sorry, I had a right blast this evening and I can't come. So it was that point of actually how far are you prepared to go to commit to these young people, to journey with them, that you're actually saying, I am here whenever, and what that sacrifice might look like. Create an environment where there's an opportunity for spiritual discussion. Young people are the most amazing in terms of discussion. You don't need to force the issue. And there are so many ways you can do it. So these pictures on here are some cards from an organisation called Youthscape. I've got some boxes with some over here if you want to look at them later. And they're just very simple discussion cards. And you can get one out, hand it to a young person, and say, answer the question. And they will. It's amazing. You don't need to ask them. You know, they'll just do it. And it can open up all sorts of conversations. But one of the things that we love doing is doing things like prayer spaces, creative spaces for young people to write. And the picture on the left there is a chair which started empty, and it just has a little poem on it, and it's about it's called The Empty Chair, and it's particularly around, you know, at Christmas there's often a chair in the house that's empty because somebody's died, and give them that opportunity to write on it. And in the space of a few days, that was completely filled with just little notes that young people had written about people, about pets. You know, grief for a young person might be moving house. They've left their friends behind. You know, it's not necessarily death. It might be parents leaving. There's all sorts of things. But that opens up that opportunity for us. I can't quite read these, but one of them on here. So this question just in the bottom right-hand corner here. Why do the big questions come at night to depress you and keep you awake, feeling alone, and like no one will ever listen or understand? You go, that's, you know, it's amazing when you see young people do that. One of the other ones here just says, will I ever truly come to terms with myself and accept who I am so I can stop hiding it and be who I want to be? And somebody helpfully has put yes at the end of it. We were doing some stuff at a Scout Jamboree, and what happened was a lot of young people started writing answers on cards to other people. And it was amazing watching young people come in one day, write something, and then the next day come back, there's an answer. And it was this thing of young people actually just discipling one another, even though they didn't know each other. It was just quite amazing. This is something I stole from St. Lawrence Church in Reading, from their website. And it's just how they describe themselves as a church. A multi-generational church called to the young people of Reading who don't go to church. Jesus is our life and the young people are our mission. We're called to be an inclusive family together. And I just love that sense of, we're not just called to the young people in the church. We're called to the young people who don't go to church. We're called to everybody who doesn't go to church. You know, the church is not here for its own benefit. We're here for the benefit of those that don't go to church. And sometimes we lose that focus. And so we need to learn what it is to journey with people who might be outside our group. They may never come here, but to journey with a young person is to give them an opportunity to choose Jesus at some point. And, you know, often we won't see the point. I think, I can't remember who it is that talks about it, might be J. John. You know, we have this idea that somebody's, you know, bang, you come to faith. But actually sometimes that, you know, it's more like a sort of, you start here, or as Peter said, it's this sort of spiral. And at some point, they sort of go, yeah, I think, yes, Jesus. But some people it's down here and some people it's up here. And it's sort of, they sort of decide where that is and you're not quite sure, and are they or aren't they? But actually it's this journey that we're all on. And we need to be prepared to just keep sticking with. So there's just a few books there that have been useful to me. So Effective Schools Work by Lee Jackson really talks about, he spent, I think, 10 years working in a school, running a basketball club, always asking God, why am I doing this? And then some major incident happened in the school and all the young people came to him and he was able to pray with them and support them. And it was the fact that he had the relationship that meant that he could do the work. Mark Iaconelli, we've talked about, and the Intentional Mentoring by Paul Wilcox. Just amazing book in terms of actually what it's like. You know, mentoring, maybe another word for discipling. Just being prepared to be accountable, being prepared to work with people. And, you know, one of the challenges for me with working with young people is that how accountable am I to them? You know, it's not it's an equal relationship. You know, the day that I'm driving them back from some event and, you know, we're having a deep discussion in the car and I'm, well, you really shouldn't be doing that, should you? And they say, well, it's all right for you to say that, but you're driving at 60 in a 40 mile an hour limit. And of course, at that point, you're like, ugh. And we do, and we need to be honest. We need to be open to it. And we need to be prepared to say, actually, we're all on this journey. They don't have junior faith at all. There isn't a junior Holy Spirit. It's the one and only And we need to be prepared to say, you know, that's where it's at. And what I'd encourage you is that young people in leadership, like young people speaking, you know, there's some really good research in the recently about how to retain young people in the church that says the way to retain young people is to give them real responsibility. So just say, fine, you do the preach today. So we're going to now spend a bit of time chatting. Really, what I'd like you to do is to just talk about what opportunities you have with young people. It might be family members, it might be people outside the family, but where are those opportunities that you could connect with young people, where you could actually start to take the blinds off and actually look, dare to get down at their level, dare to actually do something to engage at that level. So let's spend a few minutes just chatting about that.
I hope you've had some thought of just some idea of what is the thing that I could do? What is the thing that, what's the, you know, just like that. I was really, but when Peter said, who are you inviting to church? I thought, ooh, I don't know. I wonder, you know, perhaps, you know, some of us, the thing for tonight might be, well, what's something I could actually do to encourage a young person? What is something, you know, because I think we often think that's someone else's job, but actually it's all of our jobs. So, but Jonathan, we're going to have just a couple of thoughts or questions back to you as we like to do. So before we pray and finish. So is there, does anyone have anything that they'd like to reflect back about whether or not you feel like you can work with young people?
Thank you for your examples. However, there are also a whole lot of youngsters who would appear to have everything in their favour. Not the traumatic upbringing that your examples proposed, who still seem to have enormous difficulties. Well, how would you comment on that? How would you identify some of them?
I think in reality there are far less that when you actually have conversations with them would say that they are in that place. There's almost always something going on with young people, whether it's about, you know, their own sense of who they are and their place in the world. Yes, those are sort of, I don't think they're extreme cases, because, you know, Those are cases that, you know, in the last couple of years in a small village, it's normal. It's not abnormal. It's quite normal to have, you know, broken families and that mess that's going on. And sometimes you can have a young person who, yes, they look as though they're great. You know, they're achieving in everything. They're academically great. And then they crash. Because the pressure of life is to achieve. You know, we're, as Peter was saying, we're being measured on everything. Young people are on a sausage production line of, you know, you go to school, you do this, you do this, you do this, you do this, you do this. And actually sometimes what we need to do is to just be space. We need to be the space where we just say, it's okay to do nothing here today.
I was a youth worker for 12 years, and I find actually you never know. This is the thing, until just like every human being, it's like you have the thing of, okay, you go to a private school, you seem to have everything, you're doing really, really well. And actually, when you get to know somebody, then actually the issues might be exactly the same as the person down the road, or the person down the road, you think, oh, you've had a tough life, haven't you? But then you get to them and say, you are an incredibly strong person. You're doing so. Don't make assumptions. My suggestion is not to make assumptions. Each person is so unique that actually it's as you get to the journey of getting to know them that then it appears. So in fact the working is almost exactly the same with those people as it is with the others. Anyone else? Yeah.
There seems to be a really good emphasis on spirituality with young people, which is great to hear. because I think they're often forgotten in that area. Can you maybe open up the area of, say, neo-monasticism and youth without mentioning with? Explain which bit of the question.
Neo-monasticism and also with.
Okay, so with sat in front of you on the magazine.
Oh, so this thing.
Yeah,
so
with.
This is a...
Yeah, just without mentioning that. I just thought it'd be interesting to hear how you see the connection with prayerful, deep prayer, church practice, prayer rhythm and stuff. Obviously opening up the chair idea is great space. But that kind of
prayer with young people. No, sorry.
Okay, so the reference to with is to do with a project over at Ditchingham, which is a project where some youth leaders from London mainly are looking at setting up a community that is very specifically around praying for young people, but also a place where young people can go and enter into a rhythm of prayer. But I think the part of the question really is about the spirituality side with young people of partly my previous comment about young people wanting to find space. And I think there is a real temptation as churches that we reflect society and culture rather than we act as the sort of foil. So we see a busy world. And so we go, we need to entertain the young people and we need to compete with that and we need to fill it. And so what we end up doing is actually exasperating the sense of busyness and not giving them space and not giving them time and not giving them that ability to check out a little bit and think. There are some really good resources around for young people. There's a couple of, I can't remember them off the top of my head, a couple of websites that they can access. There's a couple of, you know, I know a lot of young people at the moment are using the YouVersion Bible. There's some really great Bible plans on there that really help them in that rhythm. I brought this box along, which has got various bits in it from Youthscape that I use. This one particularly is all my sort of mental health stuff for young people. But they have some resources. So one of them is called a shuffle deck. And it's, I think it's, I can't remember how many, 42 cards, something like that. So there's one that is for new Christians. And there's one which is just as a help for people to build a pattern in their life. So it's like take a card each day and it will say, okay, today, you know, read the Bible. Breakfast, lunch and tea, and then the next day there's another one. And it's the idea of them is to help young people get to a point where they have a pattern in their life that they can actually repeat, and they start putting in practice a sort of rhythm to their life. So there are things around for that, and I think young people are starting to look for that, and we need to just find ways to enable it without becoming busy and putting more stuff in. But it's very hard. It's in you know, how do you move from a concentration span of 2 minutes to trying to get people to say, actually, I'm going to concentrate for a bit longer. I'm going to focus on prayer. So, you know, how do we model that for people? I don't know whether that answered it. But.
Okay. Well, we're coming near the end of our time, and so I think it would be really good if we just spent the last few moments together praying for the things that we've talked about. So let's spend a bit of time praying about the issue of discipleship, and particularly the issue about young people, that indeed we might have and raise a new generation of, the Lord might raise up a new generation of followers of Jesus. in this county and in this nation. So let's spend 5 minutes just on our tables around us. Let's finish off with some prayer together. Let's pray. So Heavenly Father, as we go into this night, would you grant us a safe journey home? Would you grant us a restful night's sleep? And Lord, you send us out into your world tonight and tomorrow. And Father, I pray that tomorrow we might hear your call to love our neighbor, to love you with all our heart, soul, mind and strength, and to love our neighbor as ourselves. May we be those who disciple and are disciples, and Lord, particularly with young people in the coming days. Lord, may we hear your call and obey. And so, Lord, will we know your blessing and your love and your grace, your kindness and your power tonight. In the name of Jesus. Amen. Okay, we're here next week, and we are we're looking at prayer next week. And Jonathan has something else to say.
Yeah, just in terms of resources, if you have looked at the Dawson website recently, it has changed. There is a section on it called the Mission Hub, and in there, there's a whole load of resources, all categorised. So if you search on there for discipleship, there's a whole load of resources. But if there's one site that's worth going, it's called disciplekit.org. And it is a whole list of stuff. So all the stuff Peter was talking about is on there, various other bits and pieces. So there's some great resources out there that should fit any shape.